more like we complement each other. In basic trigonometry terms, cosine is the sine of the complementary or co-angle. I took trigonometry in high school. All I remember is pi r squared.
I would argue that pi are round, but whatever gives you a right angle.
He shrugged. I laughed, even though the joke was painfully punny, and my hopes took his words as permission to start the countdown clock on their evil little space rocket. So, he rubbed his hands together, about those margaritas. We didn't have margaritas, or shots, sadly. Instead, we ate while we worked. Him on the couch with his feet propped up on the ottoman, me on the floor again, and listened to the police on vinyl. But this time I kept sneaking peeks at him, watching how he shoved his hands into his hair every so often. I guessed whenever he encountered a problem, he sent it in all different directions. I also noticed how nice his hands were, and his chin. I chided myself for not admiring his chin prior to now. What is wrong with you? The man has a magnificent chin and jaw. Truly, I was in love with his jaw, or at the very least, I had a crush on it. We'd long finished dinner and had been working for a good hour when he suddenly asked me,
"Why did your boyfriend break up with you?"
I glanced up from my laptop and peered at him, unsure I'd heard the question correctly. Here I was mooning over his exquisite jaw, and there he was, thinking about my ex-boyfriend. Was that a good sign? Pardon me?
Your ex-boyfriend, David.
He lifted his magnificent chin toward the engagement party invite on the top of my mail stack by the door.
The one who invited you to his party. The one,
yes, I know who he is.
Why'd he do it?
Tilting my head from one side to the other, I searched the air around me for a succinct way to explain all the ways our relationship had failed.
You cheated?
He guessed, his look full of suspicion. The question made me flinch.
What?
No. No, I didn't cheat. I wouldn't do that. If I wanted out of a relationship, I'd just be upfront about it. I don't understand cheating as a concept. Why not just leave?
Agree.
He set his laptop on the ottoman and stood, meandering to the untouched bottle of Patron and opened it. My kitchen was so small he was able to open the bottle, then shift his weight to one side in order to grab a glass. My eyes strayed to where his shirt lifted, exposing his firm stomach and one side as he reached for the tumbler. I felt a little lightheaded. I also swallowed, rather than drool on myself.
I don't understand cheating either. Do you want some?
He indicated to the tequila. No, thank you. I was already lightheaded enough. The last thing I needed was a shot of tequila. On autopilot, I added, cheating and lying make no sense. Matt poured himself two fingers of tequila and shook his head at my statement.
No, I understand lying.
This statement shocked me out of my Matt body appreciation trance. You understand lying?
Yes.
He tossed back the clear liquid, then puckered his lips, shaking his head quickly.
Whoa, do you have any lemons?
Tell me. I requested, enormously curious as to why Matt thought lying in relationships was permissible and combating a sensation of unease at this revelation. Tell me why you think lying is okay.
I didn't say it was okay, but I understand why people do it.
Why do they do it?
Because they don't want to hurt their partner's feelings,
he said matter-of-factly, recorking the Patron. His statement struck a nerve. Maybe because David used to lie to me to protect my feelings, or maybe because I used to lie to David to protect his. I studied him, his open expression, his steady gaze. Who lied, Matt?
What do you mean?
Did you lie, or did your ex-wife?
Carrie?
Matt asked, eyes rimmed with surprise.
No, Carrie never lied. I'm not talking about Carrie.
Then who are you talking about?
Nah, you first. Why'd your boyfriend break up with you?
Gathering a deep breath, I stood, grabbing the Cuddle Sutra from the counter. If we're going to talk instead of work, we might as well go through the positions in this book.
Okay,
he said, following me.
My body is yours to command.
I chuckled, but a lusty little fire lit in my lower belly, making my chest tight and achy with anticipation. Let me see. I switched on the overhead light in my room and motioned to the bed. Lay down and let me look at this thing.
Is that really called the Kadal Sutra?
He lay on his back in the center of the bed, his hands behind his head, and dropped his eyes to the book in my hands.
Yes.
According to my research, most cuddle salons hand it out to professional cuddlers as a guide of sorts.
Huh.
He cleared his throat, then nudged me with his socked foot.
David, break up. Continue.
I glanced at the ceiling, not wanting to discuss David. Not now. Not when we could be talking about other things. Maybe,
oh,
I don't know.
Do you like me, yes or no?
Apparently, when I had a crush on someone, I mentally reverted back to a middle schooler passing notes with checkboxes.
I guess he never pushed me.
I endeavored to focus on his question. He was an enabler for everything and never spoke up when he was unhappy. So one day it all boiled over and he broke things off. Matt gave me a sideways glance.
How long were you two together?
Just over 6 years.
Why didn't you get married?
Ugh, I hated that question. Stalling, I opened the book to the first position, one called The Come to Papa. Wrinkling my nose at the name, I analyzed the diagram. Stay just like that, I said, turning the book to show Matt the picture.
Oh, I approve of the name.
Matt waggled his eyebrows as he opened his arms.
Daddy wants a hug.
I laugh snorted and kneeled on the bed, a thrill caused by his silly, sexy words giving me giddy goosebumps. This was a promising start. Walking on my knees until I was at his waist, I lay flat on my stomach, bending and positioning one of my legs between his, my chest against his torso, my cheek over his heart. His arms came around me and squeezed.
I have you trapped. So, tell me, why didn't you get married? 6 years is considered a long time to date.
You sound like my dad. That's what he said.
Well, this is the come-to-papa position.
I chuckled, then sighed. Let's see. Well, David asked me to marry him, but it never felt...
right.
He supplied?
Exactly.
Matt began smoothing his large palm down my arm, then threaded his fingers in my hair.
Looking back, do you feel like he was a mistake? That dating him for so long was a waste of time?
No. I lifted my head, placing my chin on my forearms where they rested on his chest. He was what I needed at the time, I think.
Meaning?
Someone kind. I smiled thoughtfully, thinking back to all the times David went out of his way to be thoughtful.
But you didn't marry him.
Matt pointed out, a hint of accusation in his tone. I pushed myself up, avoiding his gaze, and showed Matt the next position. Basically, it was a yin-yang shape, where Matt would lay on his side, his head by the headboard, and I would lay on my side, my head at the foot of the bed. Then we'd both bend our legs, allowing each person to rest his or her head on the other's knees or thighs. Once we were in position, and I noted the way his arms were crossed as well as his grumpy expression, I sought to answer his last question. If I'm honest, completely honest, I didn't marry David when he asked because he never wanted to fight. Matt stiffened, a deep crease forming between his eyebrows.
Meaning?
He asked, a breathless quality to his voice. I mean, he would do everything in his power to avoid fighting, even if it meant making himself terribly unhappy, which only made me feel guilty. We couldn't disagree. He'd rush to change or fix whatever made me upset, rather than taking a stand. and he never seemed to have an opinion about anything until I shared mine first. And then, one day, Matt uncrossed his arms and reached for one of my hands, flaying with the tips of my fingers as he listened, and more or less melting my heart. I continued, haltingly, wanting to focus on my words, but finding it difficult to do so when he was touching me. I was doing this story on bodybuilders and gym rats. It started out being a story about the phenomena of people putting on makeup or doing their hair to go to the gym. My editor was curious, do they sweat off their makeup or ruin their hair? Or do they only choose exercises that are sweat-free? Or what was going on? I thought it was dumb at the time, but I did it because she was in love with the idea. Anyway, that led to a story about gym selfies. And that led to a story about people who spend most of their day in the gym. And that led to a story about body dysmorphia, but it was entitled The Tiny Truth About Bodybuilders. Matt smirked. "Ruh-roh," he said, sounding just like Scooby-Doo. I glanced upward. "I know."
"How'd you convince the guys to show you their penis?"
I stared at Matt. "Is he serious?" When he continued to regard me with curiosity, I said, "I'm a woman."
"Yeah? So? Do women have a skeleton key to get into restricted areas that I don't know about?"
"Yes. Boobs." He frowned at me, and before he could help himself, his eyes flickered to my chest, then back to my face.
"Meaning?"
"I used my boobs." His frown became a scowl.
"You flashed them?"
"No, of course not, dipstick. I don't need to flash my boobs. I just need to make it obvious that I have boobs."
"Clearly, you have boobs."
He gestured to my torso.
"You are a woman. Breasts are a part of your genetic code. But what I don't understand are the words that are coming out of your mouth. Again, Greek. I say, how did you use your boobs? And you say, potato dog dancing lamppost."
I giggled at him in his silly consternation. "Okay, fine. All I did was brush my fingertips along my neckline and asked if they'd show me their penis for a story I was writing." His scowl eased, his expression morphing into amazement.
"That's it?"
"Yep."
"Amazing."
"Yep. Boobs. They're amazing." He lifted an eyebrow in an over-exaggerated manner, giving me a charmingly lopsided grin.
"Do you think if I skimmed my fingertips over my fly, it would work with women?"
I threw my head back and laughed, and he laughed. The bed shook with our laughter, and when I glanced at him, I saw his eyes were on my neck, but he was still laughing. "Sure." I wiped tears of hilarity from the corner of my eyes. "Give it a go. See if you can get out of a speeding ticket by gesturing to your crotch."
"Excuse me, Madam Police Officer, so you're saying the thrust?"
He tilted his hips forward just slightly, using a silly voice. His index finger skimmed along the zipper of his pants.
"Of the issue was my speed?"
I trailed my fingertips along the edge of my bra beneath my shirt. "Thank you for keeping me abreast of the situation," I said, playing along. Matt's eyes flickered to where my hand moved, and he blinked. His smile wavered. Neither of us spoke, but it took me a moment to hear the silence, and then it was oddly deafening. His eyes were still on my chest, and I held my breath. Was this it? Would this be the moment? Would he do something? Make a move? The tension was almost unbearable. Almost. And I prepared myself for something. But then he blinked away, his attention moving to someplace behind me.
"You're right," he said,
a new edge in his voice, his earlier smile present, but somehow different. "I'm right?" I asked, breathlessly, my hopes singularly focused on the next words out of his mouth.
"Yeah. Boobs are amazing."
He cleared his throat, shifting on the bed.
Should we move to a new position?
Wait. What just happened? Oh, sure. I lowered my eyes to the comforter, careful to keep the perplexed disappointment from his sight and from my tone. I reached for the book blindly, flipping it to the next page and forcing myself to study it. He'd had a perfect in, a perfect opportunity to make a move. And he didn't. I wondered briefly if I smelled and turned away so I could take a surreptitious sniff of my armpit. For the record, I smelled great. The next position called for his head to rest on my lap. Doubting myself, I decided to skip the position. Had I completely misread his behavior over the last few weeks? Did he still want our relationship to be strictly platonic? I continued flipping until I found one that looked benign so I could get my head straight. Here's one. We both just lay next to each other and hold hands. I showed him the picture. He nodded, his face devoid of expression, and lay adjacent to me on the bed. Our heads were on the pillows and we rested next to each other, not touching except holding hands.
Back to your ex. He saw the article and flipped out finally?
His tone, like his features, felt reserved. My swimming, simmering, seesawing emotions had me gulping a few large breaths. I couldn't read him, and I couldn't decipher what was happening in my mind and heart. He was happy to hang with me, but not wanting anything more. Right? Right. Okay. Fine. I swallowed my disappointment and endeavored to recalibrate my expectations for the evening. Clearly, I was being unfair, trying to assign feelings to him that were non-existent. These feelings are one-sided, your-sided, not his-sided.
Marie?
I rubbed my forehead, trying to recall his question and keep the tightness out of my tone. He didn't flip out, not quite. I told him what the assignment was, and he said he was fine with it. I told him I didn't have to write the article, but he said he wanted me to do it. But then, after it came out, one of the guys, the bodybuilders, wrote David a letter and told him that I'd slept with him. David called me, told me it was over. I shrugged, hating that I could remember how much his call had hurt, and how much hurt that he had called instead of telling me face to face. As though reading my thoughts, Matt sneered.
He called? After 6 years, he called you to say it was over.
I nodded.
What a fucking coward. Man, you deserve so much better.
I paused at the intensity of his voice and stared, as something about the way he'd said the word deserve struck me as odd. This was not the first time he'd brought up how he thought I was exceptionally deserving. I glanced at our joined hands, unable to figure out precisely why his use of the word bothered me. But it was okay, I think. I mean, I adored him. I did. He was so sweet. But we weren't right for each other, obviously. At some point, one of us had threaded our fingers together instead of a simple handhold. And I think I've just always wanted someone to adore.
Someone to cuddle.
I lifted my gaze and found him staring at me with poignant concentration. Yes, Matt. I squeezed his hand and he squeezed mine back. Someone to cuddle. And right now, I wanted to cuddle with Matt. Even if he could only give me platonic cuddles. I wanted him.
You should have someone who adores you, who is worthy of you, Marie.
His mouth firmed into a determined, tight line.
Never settle for less.
Chapter 15. Personal Couriers, Delivery Robots. Founded and funded by Skype co-founders Ati Hainla and Janusz Fries, Starship's personal couriers are designed to deliver goods locally in 15 to 30 minutes within a 2 to 3 mile radius in suburban areas. The knee-high robots travel on sidewalks among pedestrians at a speed of up to 4 miles per hour. The robots are autonomous, covered in cameras, sensors, and LED lights to both notice and be noticed. They are able to sense pedestrians, cyclists, and crosswalks, and avoid getting in the way. The robots will begin food deliveries with DoorDash in Redwood City and Postmates in Washington, D.C., beginning in 2017. Source: Starship Technologies.
What about hot sex?
My mouth fell open and I gaped at him. Excuse me? Way to blindside a lady, Professor. We'd just left the movie theater, having taken off a half day of work so we could spend an afternoon watching a triple feature. We both wanted to see the same three movies, but hadn't been able to pick just one, so we compromised by watching all three. Presently, we were walking toward an ice cream shop he knew about, and apparently Matt wanted to discuss hot sex.
You know.
He nudged my shoulder with his, grinning with overly exaggerated lasciviousness, such that it wasn't lascivious at all. It was just silly.
Is that one of the reasons you stuck things out with Doug? Because he supported both portrait and landscape modes?
What? You mean David?
Sure, whatever his name is. Did he have you demo his multi-touch capabilities? Was it love at first optical recognition, or did he have to ambulate by your location multiple times? I bet you liked it when he touched your PCI slot, and it probably made his floppy drive hard.
Speaking of hard, I was laughing so hard my jaw hurt. Oh, God, stop! Matt lowered his voice and leaned close to my ear.
Your mouth says zero, but your eyes say one.
Oh, no. I tried to look horrified, glancing at him askance, but the effect was ruined by my laughter. Was that a binary pickup line? He was also laughing, but not nearly as lost to it as I was. Man, I loved how funny he was.
Come on, Marie. Did he make your interface GUI?
I made another involuntary snort laughing sound, but finally managed to say, no, David wasn't really like that. Matt's smile fell.
What about other suitors?
Wiping the tears of hilarity from the corners of my eyes, I didn't point out Matt's use of the word suitors, and instead I focused on my other boyfriends, short-lived as they might have been, and scanned my memory for any occasions of hot sex. I was with two guys in college, both of whom were inexperienced. We didn't stay together long enough to unlock the key to hot sex. But there was this one guy I dated, or thought I was dating, a musician, a friend of my brother's. He was a fantastic kisser. And yeah, I guess he was a purveyor of hot sex. I thought I was in love.
But you weren't?
He looked acutely interested. My smile flat, I shrugged self-deprecatingly. I found out I was just one of many, so I called it off. Matt's jaw ticked as his gaze traveled over my face, but he said nothing. I think that's one of the reasons I stayed with David for so long.
The lack of hot sex?
No. I shot him an amused look. Because I trusted him to be faithful. I didn't add that with David, I preferred to take care of business myself. I never saw David lost to passion while we had sex. It seemed like he preferred blowjobs more than traditional sex, so most of our times together were as follows. I'd go down on him until he was hard. We'd have sex for maybe 2 minutes. I'd fake it sometimes. He'd come. Then, if I felt so inspired, I'd finish myself off, by myself, in the bathroom. Or maybe the next day while he was at work. And I didn't like it when he went down on me. It felt like he was doing something just because he thought I'd like it, like a favor. He didn't say anything to make me feel that way, but I never believed he was into it, and I couldn't get out of my head long enough to enjoy the feeling. So, eventually, I told him I didn't like it, and that was that.
He was faithful, but not a purveyor of hot sex,
Matt said, forcing me to grin. No, not a purveyor of hot sex.
Would you like to?
Have hot sex? He asked, now sounding and looking acutely interested. Glancing at him askance and giving him my very best get-over-yourself look, I endeavored to ignore how his question made all the most fantastic parts of me tense with anticipation. With forced flippantness, I said, "Are you offering me a prototype robot capable of hot sex?"
"No," he laughed. "I'm just curious." Carrie didn't want to. She was very efficient in the bedroom.
Shy?
No, efficient. At first, I was as well, so it worked. But then I wanted to try new things, positions and such, and she didn't understand why we couldn't just do it for 5 minutes once a week, missionary. I winced, at this point in our friendship, no longer surprised by his candor.
Oh, my.
When we divorced, I made it a point to find someone who wanted to have hot sex. And that was...
His voice deepened, his sly smile sliding into place.
A fucking god-awful disaster.
I burst out laughing at the unexpected description, covering my mouth.
She was completely crazy.
His eyes grew wide, and something like remembered unpleasantness pulled at the corners of his mouth. Eventually, he shook himself, his attention refocusing on me. "But the hot sex was worth it?" I asked, both curious and teasing.
"No."
And just like that, I was laughing again.
"No, no, no. God, no. Definitely no. It wasn't even that hot. It was just freaky and dirty and weird."
"So freaky, dirty, and weird don't do it for you?"
"I guess not. Not with her, anyway."
Matt's gaze conducted a quick down, then up sweep of my body. But before I could process the mysterious shift behind his eyes, he pointed to a sign across the street.
"That's the place I want to go. They have coconut ice cream."
"Sure, fine, we can go there. But about your lady who you were using for hot sex, maybe if you..."
"I wasn't using her for hot sex. I don't use people. I liked her at first, or I thought I did. I wasn't just looking for a hookup. She was smart, worked for Udall as a team leader. I thought, okay, here's someone I could be with, share my interests, let's see where this goes. And then she starts showing up at my work every day, at all times."
His gaze swung back to mine.
"She accused one of my managers of trying to seduce me in front of my entire team. She put a camera in my house."
"Oh, no. That's so awful."
"She told me she did it because she loved me and that I'd never been loved before, so I didn't understand."
"That's not love." Matt gathered a deep breath and shook his head.
"She cheated on me with lots of different guys. She took pictures of herself doing it and then left them all over my bed."
I sucked in a shocked breath. "That's so bizarre. I'm so sorry."
He shrugged. "By the time it happened, it was a relief. I decided if that's what love is, if that's how people behave when they're in love, I didn't want any part of it."
"Wow." I was stuck on his words. "If that's what love is." I was assembling the puzzle pieces of Matt Simmons and finding that much of his repugnance for long-term relationships made a lot more sense now. "So that's the last time you dated someone?" I wondered if he had any more buried horror stories.
"No."
He gathered another deep breath, shaking his head.
"I tried dating a few times after that."
"What happened?"
"Well, one woman wanted to take pictures of us all the time for her Instagram account. The few times we went out, it felt like we were dating for the sole purpose of posting pictures to Instagram. She wasn't ever happy with how I looked or how I dressed, and she wouldn't let me drink my coffee, you know, at coffee shops where they put the design on the top, until she'd photographed it. And then she always wanted me to take pictures of her so she could get just the right one and post it to her account. Then she'd spend the whole date on her phone reading comments on her photos. She couldn't understand why I didn't think this part of her personality was cute."
He made a face.
"It wasn't cute. It was annoying and childish."
His addition of the descriptor childish made me pause. because Matt often did things that were somewhat childlike, like his propensity to ask all manner of questions without gauging their appropriateness, or his tendency to be honest in all situations. He just seemed candidly curious about everything, which never struck me as childish. I associated childish behavior with selfishness and childlike behavior with never being taught or knowing better. But I hoped he'd never know better. I hoped this part of his personality never changed, because I loved his unguarded curiosity.
So you broke up? She dumped me when she found out I'd automated my text messaging.
What?
You know.
He made a vague gesture with his hand.
I built a program that would respond to her text messages.
You did what? I thought we'd reached a point in our relationship where he couldn't shock me anymore. I was wrong.
She texted me a lot. I didn't have time to respond to her immediately, or at all, not the way she needed. So I designed a simple AI with several different modes to immediately respond to her messages, dependent on keywords.
Like what? I should have been outraged on her behalf, but I wasn't. This was too fascinating.
Like she'd send me a text saying something like, "You're so sexy." And so the program would go into sexting mode.
My mouth fell open with more shock, but he wasn't finished.
Or she'd ask me what I was doing, and it would go into conversation mode. Or she'd text about how she was angry about something or upset, and it would go into supportive mode.
I can't believe you outsourced your relationship to an AI.
It's actually where I got the idea for the compassion AI. She was perfectly happy until she texted me while we were together. My phone was in the other room, and the AI immediately responded. Oh, something cool. I also programmed it to check my calendar and respond with dates and times if she was trying to schedule something. All in all, it saved me hours of pointless texting.
Matt.
Marie?
If you truly like a person, their texts are pointless. You'll look forward to them. He shrugged noncommittally. I gave him the side eye. Have you been automating your texts with me?
No, of course not.
His expression grew intensely serious.
You don't seem to require frequent texts, or immediate responses for that matter. Plus, don't I usually message you first?
That's true. I realized he was right. Usually he was the one to initiate text conversations between us. So why didn't you just break up with her if you were unhappy? Because... He visibly struggled to explain, his attention darting from the sky to the sidewalk to the street.
No woman is going to like how much I work, how unavailable I am. If it wasn't her, it was going to be someone else, because I'm the problem.
He took a deep breath, wiping his face tiredly with his hand.
I know I work too much. My job, my research, that's what I want to be doing.
I nodded. I get that. You love your work. It's difficult to justify giving up time spent working for a person you can't be certain is worth the investment.
That's part of it.
His gaze hardened, then turned contemplative.
But I also have to wonder.
I waited for him to continue. When he didn't, after several moments, I prompted. What?
I wonder if I'm just not built for that. You know? With Carrie, we weren't ever in love. We cared about each other, but it wasn't what I see with people like, let's say, Fiona and Greg, or even Carrie and her new husband. We were good friends, and it was very convenient to get married, so we did. We saved on living expenses, got to move into the married people dorm, always had someone to see movies with, and then everyone since, I've never...
He shook his head, like he was frustrated. What?
Never mind,
he said, with a touch of melancholy, his eyes lifting to the sky. My heart beat quickly, frantically, and the crazy in my mind had been awoken. It was currently screaming from its padded cell, "I'll love you. I'll teach you how to love. You're so smart and funny and sweet and unfairly handsome. Let's have hot sex." I had to seriously concentrate on my breathing and roll my lips between my teeth because I couldn't calibrate my smile and my lung function at the same time. Luckily, he wasn't looking at me when he continued speaking his thoughts aloud.
But I do love my job. I do love my work.
Unable to contain myself, I stopped him by tugging on his arm and waited until he looked at me before saying, "You sound so sad, Matt." He stepped closer, a small smile on his lips, his expressive eyes twinkling down at me like I was wonderful. But I also saw something different there as well. I saw self-possession, restraint, and frustration.
"How can I be sad? I'm with you. Here."
He wrapped me in his arms. I rested my cheek against his chest and felt his heartbeat. I'd never been particularly touchy-feely with any of my male friends, but with Matt, it didn't matter where we were. Embracing usually felt completely normal. But not tonight. Tonight, there was a stiffness in his posture, like he was holding me close, but not too close. Something was bothering him, but I didn't know how to push the issue. A few people passed by on the sidewalk, taking no note of us. I tried snuggling closer to his chest, hoping to dispel the sense of disharmony. It didn't work. The tension remained. So I inhaled the scent of him. He smelled like peppermint, making me think he had a mint habit and also a lovely cologne or aftershave I couldn't place.
"Are you smelling me?"
he asked, tilting his head to the side.
"Because if you are, you should know I'm totally into that."
"Maybe." I pulled away, wagging my eyebrows at him, wanting to disperse the odd, dark cloud that had emerged over the evening and instead replicate our previous lightheartedness. "You'll never know for certain." Matt fell into step beside me.
"Because you'll never tell?"
I nodded.
"That's not right, Marie. Real friends have no secrets between them."
He shook his head like he was disappointed in me, and I could see he was also trying to recapture our earlier mood.
"I demand you tell me the color of your underwear."
"What? Never."
"Come on."
"Nope."
He leaned close and whispered conspiratorially.
"Black, right?"
I shook my head, fighting off a shiver at his proximity.
"I'll get 'em off you. I'll get it out of you one of these days."
I said nothing because my instinct was to say, "Yes, please. How about tonight?" And he would probably think I was joking. That Friday night, I found myself fighting Professor Quirrell for the Sorcerer's Stone, still on a mat-induced high from the evening before. Okay, yes, my more than platonic feelings weren't reciprocated, but my heart didn't seem to care. I liked him. A lot. Exorbitant liking. So what if we were never anything more than friends? Being around him was beyond satisfying in so many ways. I was beginning to think a friendship with Matt was preferable to a romantic relationship with anyone else. Presently, Jack, Grace, and I donned our scarves and wands, but Grace couldn't find my wizard hat, so I'd been forced to wear one of her princess tiaras instead, which, all things considered, I thought suited me quite well. Once again, I'd made pizza, and once again, it smelled delicious.
"You know who likes pizza?"
Jack grinned as he set the table, showcasing a gap-toothed smile and a mischievous glimmer in his eyes that I was certain had been a genetic gift from his father.
"Who?"
I asked warily, packing up the board game.
"Professor Simmons,"
Grace supplied, practicing her twirls instead of helping set the table. But this was Grace's modus operandi, confirmed by her mother. I could ask the 7-year-old to do something 10 times, and on the 11th she'd act like it was the first time she'd heard the request.
Kids.
Ah, yes, the good professor. I nodded, smiling to myself.
He does indeed enjoy the pizza.
Can we invite him over?
Jack was already inching toward the door. Without waiting for my response, Grace sprinted into the kitchen, shouting, "I'll get another plate!" "Fine, fine," I tried to cover my own surge of excitement by sighing wearily. "I guess." "Yes," Jack made to leave. I crossed to my purse. "Wait, I'll text him, see if he's home. Wait, Jack!" Jack pretended he didn't hear me and darted out the front door. "Darn kids," I grumbled, stepping quickly after him out of the apartment and into the hall, finding Jack already standing outside of Matt's place.
"I just knocked."
He motioned to the door.
"No need to text."
I stood with one foot in Fiona and Greg's place and one foot out of it, shaking my head at the willful 9-year-old. "Jack," I warned.
"It's fine," he said. "I do this all the time."
We waited as 1 minute stretched into 2. Jack's expression fell from hopeful to confused, and he stared at the door with such intensity I almost expected it to burst from its hinges. I was just about to suggest that Jack come back inside and we text Matt instead, because he was likely still at the office, when the sound of the elevator dinging pulled both of our gazes down the hall. Matt's laughter greeted my ears and my heart leapt. But then it promptly fell. It fell hard. It fell from the top floor of the Sears Tower onto the pavement below. Hard. Because Matt's laughter was joined by the sound of a woman's laughter. And in the next moment they were both visible. But they didn't notice us. They were too busy with each other. Matt tugged her forward, then pressed her against the wall, his mouth fusing to hers. Her hands roamed freely, and I heard her moan, which was kind of incredible because they were at least 50 feet away. Apparently, Matt enjoyed the moaners. Good to know. Except not good to know. Not at all good to know. I hadn't recovered from the shock of witnessing Matt making kissy face with someone not me when Jack called out, "Professor Simmons!" Matt lifted his head, glancing down the hall. I stiffened, unsure what to do. He spotted Jack first, and he gave him a quizzical smile, immediately stepping away from the woman. Then he spotted me. And you know what? His smile didn't slip. It didn't falter. If anything, it brightened. Like he was happy to see me. What? The fuck? I thought I might be sick. Matt whispered something into the woman's ear as they moved from where he'd been mauling her and then took her hand and pulled her forward. "Hey, Jack." He grinned at the young boy, then lifted his attention to me as they approached, his gaze traveling over my hair before meeting my eyes. "Hi, Marie," he said easily, like we were meeting on the street, on a Sunday, after church. "What's going on?" My heart thundered between my ears as I glanced dumbly, still feeling blindsided, from the woman to Matt, then to Jack. Matt's smile slipped, then fell, frown increasing by degrees. I barely registered the confusion in his face before I tore my gaze away.
"Are you hungry?"
Jack asked merrily, clearly oblivious to everything as only 9-year-old boys can be. Or maybe it was all boys. Maybe all men are oblivious. Or maybe they don't care. "Nice tiara," the woman said, drawing my attention back to her as she sent me a friendly smile. She indicated with her chin to my head. She was really pretty. Dark eyes, dark hair, taller than me, svelte. And she was wearing a Star Wars t-shirt with Rey on it and BB-8. "So this is his type. Basically the opposite of you." Crap. It's not as if I should have thought otherwise. He'd been blatantly truthful. Hadn't he said, "It's a relief you said something first. Pragmatically, it saved me the conversation. You're not at all my type." Instinctively, my fingers lifted and I realized I was still wearing the princess tiara Grace had lent me earlier. "Oh, thank you," I said, feeling and sounding winded. In addition to winded, I was also feeling exponentially confused, and maybe a little shitty about myself. But back to the tiara. I tossed my thumb over my shoulder, saying, "My other crown is at the jeweler's, so..." Unable to stop myself, my eyes flickered to Matt's, then away, jumping around the hall. He was frowning at me now, but I couldn't think about that. I couldn't think about anything, which was crazy. I was usually so good in emergencies. Calm and collected, level-headed. Except this wasn't an emergency. It was merely a disaster. Wordlessness became silence as I struggled. I still could feel Matt's gaze on my face, but I could not for the life of me meet it. My cheeks were flushed with embarrassment. I knew they were, because I felt hot and sweaty, but also cold and wretched. The moment was just on the precipice of becoming awkward when Grace burst out of the door.
"What's taking so long?" she complained, but then she stopped short when she saw Matt and his lady friend.
Grace turned a confused frown to me.
"Is she coming too? Because I don't think we have enough pizza."
No. I forced a grin and smiled down at Grace, managing to speak without my voice shaking. "No, I think Professor Simmons and his friend have other plans. Come on, kids, let's go eat."
"Aw, man."
Jack's glower was severe, and I saw he sent the woman a hard glare just before he turned and marched back to where I stood, brushing past me into the apartment.
"I know how you feel, buddy."
Grace followed, pasting a polite smile on my face that didn't feel at all natural or right or good. I lifted my eyes as high as their necks and waved.
"Well, good night."
I thought I heard Matt say my name, but it was too late. I couldn't stop my forward momentum if I tried. Moving quickly, I shut the door behind me. Then I locked it. Then I flipped the deadbolt. Then I leaned against it, wondering if it would be overkill to move the heavy console table in front of the door as well. But then I stopped. I didn't need to erect any more barriers between Matt Simmons and me. There was no need. He'd already done that himself.
Chapter 16. Weighted Myopic Matching. Helps physicians match kidneys with donors using AI technologies. Process called dynamic matching via weighted myopia. Source, Carnegie Mellon. I decided that there was something seriously wrong with me. Matt had texted me, not a half hour after Hurricane Hallway, because that's how I felt, like I'd been stranded outside in a hurricane, and I felt nothing but numb as I read his message.
"Matt, can I come over?"
He wanted to come over.
Why?
I didn't want him to come over. "Marie, no, I'm trying to get the kids ready for bed."
"Matt, I can help."
I didn't respond. I felt hollow, but also too full. I couldn't eat the pizza, so I made tea instead, but I couldn't drink that either. When Fiona and Greg arrived home, I left immediately after, claiming a headache. It was the truth. I did have a headache. I tried not to think too much about my instinct to sprint down the hall past Matt's apartment and how I'd pressed the elevator call button 17 times. A rush of both relief and misery washed over me as soon as I stepped onto the lift and the doors closed. I walked home in a daze, my mind unable to concentrate or focus on any one thing. Instead, I played the 5 minutes of seeing Matt with his date over and over and over in my head. I watched it, I analyzed it, until I realized doing so made my heart ache anew each time, so eventually I stopped repeating the scene in my head. The next morning, after not sleeping much but not crying either, I needed to hear my mother's voice. A phone call didn't feel sufficient, so I went online and arranged for a rental car. They even picked me up. Listening to loud, angry music helped me concentrate on driving. I made it to my parents' place just after 11 a.m., parking behind my mom's Toyota in the driveway. I hadn't told them I was coming, and so I hesitated, sitting in the rental car. What if they have plans? What if my mom isn't even home? What if they have a woman over and my being here will make things awkward? My last crazy thought made me laugh, but it was a sad laugh. Regardless, it was enough to push me from the car. I walked up the path and hadn't quite made it to the rose bushes before the door opened, revealing my mom. She wore a big smile, one hand on the door, one hand on her hip. "Well, if it isn't the most brilliant and beautiful woman in the world, to what do we owe this honor?" I returned her smile, and then I promptly burst into tears. "Sometimes a person just needs their mom, and there's nothing wrong with that." My mom sent me a loving smile from where she stood, stirring the lemon curd, then shot my brother an irritated look. "What? What did I say?" He stood next to her, cutting the butter into the flour for pie crust. Presently, I was sitting at the kitchen table in my parents' kitchen, watching my mom make my favorite foods while my little brother teased us both. Upon my watery arrival, I cried for several minutes. My mother and I sat on the couch and hugged. When I'd calmed down enough to form words, I told her about Matt. I told her how we'd met, who he was, how I'd coerced him into showing me his research, and how we'd subsequently become friends. And then I told her how I thought maybe we were becoming more than friends. But I was wrong. How wrong I was became painfully obvious to me as I related the story from the night before. I didn't realize it at the time, but my brother was visiting from New York and he was in the other room. He must have overheard the entire conversation because he'd been making peanut gallery comments since entering the kitchen. But getting back to my mom, after listening patiently to my wretched tale, she dabbed at my tears and made me tea. And then she started cooking. Everything. For dinner, we'd have crab cakes, my favorite, roasted beets, my favorite, mushroom risotto, my favorite, and lemon meringue pie for dessert, my most favorite. "Thanks, Mom." I sipped at the tea, letting the aroma of chamomile soothe my frazzled nerves. It smelled like home, like tea parties from when I was little and late nights when I couldn't sleep. It felt like a salve to my heart. "Honey, I know you're still feeling sore, and I understand why after hearing your story, but I have to say, I think what happened last night was a good thing. Seeing things with your own eyes can give a murky situation clarity." "I know." She was right, of course.
"I don't understand women. Didn't he tell you from the get-go that he wasn't on the market for a committed relationship?"
This came from my brother. My mother hit him lightly on the shoulder.
"You can keep your comments to yourself, Abram."
"Yes," I answered him anyway as I examined the bottom of my cup, wishing I could read leaves.
"And didn't you two agree to be friends? You friend-zoned him, right?"
Abram continued, shifting away from my mom so he was out of her reach. She tossed daggers at him with her eyes, which made me smile.
"Yes," I nodded, confirming his question. "So the man told you the truth."
Abram moved to the fridge and placed the crust inside.
"And now you're surprised to discover he didn't lie."
I chuckled at that, appreciating how he'd worded it. I didn't need to read tea leaves to visualize the picture he was painting.
"Leave your sister alone. I mean it."
My mom held up a wooden spoon to show my brother how much she meant business.
"It's okay, Mom, I don't mind."
Then to my brother I responded, "That's exactly right. We both agreed we just wanted to be friends. So I guess that makes me the liar." My mom sighed and my brother gave me a sympathetic smile. My family would never say it, but I'd been acting like a fool.
"I know it hurts, honey."
Mom flipped off the gas stove and wiped her hands on her apron, turning to face me fully.
"And it's okay to hurt. Hurting is just as much a part of life as joy, maybe even more important. Falling down teaches you how to stand up."
I traded a secretive smile with my brother. We'd heard this advice before, many times, but it hadn't resonated with me until I'd become an adult.
"We're making all your favorite foods, and we'll have a feast tonight. We'll curl up on the couch and watch one of those Jane Austen movies.
You'll stay the night, sleep in your old bed, and we'll make breakfast together in the morning. Crepe Suzette. I even have fresh marmalade."
As she said this, she poured a cup of tea and crossed to the table, putting it down in front of my brother. "That sounds really nice." I smiled my gratitude, and it felt good to smile.
"I don't want tea."
He frowned at the cup, then at her.
"You'll drink it, and you'll be kind to your sister."
Then to me she said, "It will be nice. It'll be great. But honey, this is all the falling part. Tomorrow, when you get home, and the day after, and the day after that, that'll be the standing part."
"I know."
"Do you?" Her words were gentle, concerned. "Because that man may have let your hopes down, but he's still your friend."
"Granted, he might be the biggest idiot in the whole world for not wanting to change your mind about being just friends, but that's beside the point."
I chuckled at that, surprised she'd lasted this long before calling him an idiot.
"Only you get to decide how you stand, what you stand for, and when you do it."
She squeezed my shoulder before bending and giving me a kiss on the cheek. Then she stood, glanced around the kitchen, and mumbled to herself,
"Now I need to message your father to pick up the mushrooms. Where did I put my purse?"
Mom drifted out of the kitchen in the direction of the dining room, leaving me with my brother. I lifted my eyes to his, found him giving me a funny look.
"What? What is it?"
Abram's chest expanded as he pulled air into his lungs, and the usually sardonic set to his brows cleared, like clouds parting, revealing a sincerely thoughtful expression.
"So you're assuming this guy isn't interested in you, as more than a friend, right?"
I scoffed. I don't think it's an assumption at this point. He comes home with a woman. I witness him making out with her in the hallway. Clearly, they're going to his apartment for one reason. And when he spots me, he acts like he's happy to see me. I friend-zoned him and he took me seriously. If he was ever interested in me that way, he isn't anymore.
"Maybe."
Abram was chewing on the inside of his lip, his eyes having lost focus as he stared over my shoulder. Abruptly, his attention cut back to mine and he looked hesitant to share his thoughts.
"What?"
"I still think you should believe him and act accordingly. If he says he doesn't want a long-term thing with anyone, believe him. But maybe, maybe, he thinks you're out of his league."
My eyebrows shot up, then down, and then I lost track of what they were doing.
"What?"
"He was happy to see you, right? Sounds like for a guy who's a workaholic, he's been making a lot of time for you. A guy doesn't do that for his friends. Not for guy friends, not for woman friends. Not that much time. Not for one person. So maybe he does think about you like that, a lot, but he thinks he's not worthy of you."
I stared at my brother, processing his words, at first rejecting them. Because how could Matt possibly think he wasn't worthy? Of me? That was crazy. I was a nice person, but I wasn't some amazing catch. Hadn't he said early on that I was just like everyone else?
"I'll never say this to you again, so listen up. You're pretty badass, Marie."
Abram interrupted my thoughts, leaning forward like he was telling me a secret.
"You're wicked smart and cool and drama-free, which is a huge deal. Drama-free is at the top of my list these days. You can be intimidating."
"Me? But I'm a Hufflepuff." Abram gave me one of his rare, genuine grins.
"Yeah. Being a good person can be intimidating. Look at Mom and Dad. They're the best people I know. I'm 24 and I'm still afraid of letting them down. Think about Mother Teresa. Would you want to meet her? I mean, when she was alive, not zombie Mother Teresa. I'd be scared shitless, like she'd see into my dark, dark soul and be disappointed in me."
That made me laugh, and I pointed a teasing smile at him.
"Yeah, you should be afraid."
"All I'm saying is, maybe the thought of disappointing you, of being a disappointment to you, or not being worthy of your awesome, is what's really going on. In which case,
Abram gathered another deep breath and leaned back in his chair. You're no better off. Because you should believe him about that, too. Matt. I have a proposition for you. Meet me at our coffee shop tomorrow at 10. Matt. Just in case you've forgotten, it's the one where we bonded over the 120 days of Sodom. Matt. Pun intended.
What's that face?
I glanced up from my phone, finding Nico watching me with a concerned expression. Tucking my cell back in my purse, I shrugged. It's just my face. I'd left my parents' house after breakfast on Sunday, returned the car, and walked the few blocks to Quinn's building. Nico, Fiona, and I were at Nico and Elizabeth's place, putting finishing touches on the food and drinks for dinner. It was a Sunday night, and Fiona decided to throw an impromptu dinner party. Not wanting to leave Janie out, Fiona, Nico, and I had prepared the food at Elizabeth's penthouse, with plans to carry it over to Quinn and Janie's to serve.
Sorry, I promise. I'm not the smile police. But who was that?
The tall Italian glanced at Fiona, then lifted his head toward my purse.
Was that work? Is something wrong?
I shook my head, affixing an unconcerned smile on my features. No, it was Matt. What's going on with you two? This question came from Fiona. She looked confused. Every time I ask Matt about it, he says you're working on a story together. That's true. I rolled a rectangle of melon in a slice of prosciutto, then placed it on the tray, pushing away my raw, prickly feelings.
It's more than that, Nico accused. Look at her. She's blushing. That means something sexy is happening.
That made me laugh, even though I didn't feel like laughing. He pointed at me and looked at Fiona as though appealing to her.
And now giggling, see?
I see it. She watched me with a pensive non-expression.
Now what's wrong with you?
Nico asked Fiona.
Why do you look worried?
Her eyes cut to him. Do I? Yes, I answered for him, giving her a questioning look. She stared at me for a beat, then picked up the stuffed tenderloin she'd just finished covering in foil and handed it, oven mitts and everything, to Nico. Take this next door, please, and tell them we'll be finished in just a few more minutes. He glanced between the two of us.
I see what's going on here. Don't think I don't know what's going on.
You boys have your secrets, us girls have ours. Fiona gave him a patient smile. Goodbye, Nicoletta. Releasing a grumbly sigh, Nico mumbled something under his breath about Dan and Kat and then left the kitchen. Fiona didn't speak again until she heard the door to the apartment shut. How much do you know about Matt? I struggled for how best to respond, finally deciding on, we're not dating, Fiona. We're just friends. And I wasn't even sure I wanted to be that anymore. Being just friends with Matt had been fine and dandy until I'd had to witness him being more than friends with someone else. Has he told you he was married? Yes, I admitted freely. He also said he isn't interested in long-term relationships. I tried to sound matter-of-fact. Good. I'm glad he's being honest with you, she said, her eyes betraying a hint of concern. You should believe him. Licking my suddenly dry lips, I rolled another piece of melon in the prosciutto. Yes, he's been very honest with me. Something in my tone must have alerted her to how I was feeling, because she softened her voice as she asked, And he told you about his old job? Wanting him back? My head snapped up and I stared at her, my mouth working for a few seconds before I managed, What? Fiona rubbed her belly absent-mindedly. He told Greg they're pushing him pretty hard about it, offering him stock options and his own laboratory, his own dedicated line budget. Did he tell you that? I had to shake my head, because he hadn't told me. Fiona crossed to me and placed her hand on my arm, tugging me so we were facing. Hey, talk to me. I had the sudden urge to sit down. I don't really know what to say. Was he leaving? Was he going to tell me? Why hadn't he told me already? Her probing stare intensified.
Did something happen? You seemed out of sorts on Friday night when we got home.
I laughed. Not a crazy laugh, more like a tired, sad, irritated with myself laugh, and crossed to the kitchen table, sinking into a chair. I've been deluding myself for a few weeks, letting my hopes run away from me, but I'm honestly fine now. As Fiona sat in the seat next to mine, I gave her the Cliff's Notes version of what had occurred, including the visit to my parents' house and my mother's sage advice. I did, however, leave out my brother's hypothesis. I hadn't decided what to think about that yet.
Oh, Marie.
Just like my mom, Fiona reached for my hand and held it. But unlike my mom, her expression wasn't sympathetic. It was equal parts frustrated and determined.
I will always have a soft spot in my heart for Maddie Simmons. And as much as I'd like to see him with someone as amazing as you, there's a reason it never occurred to me to set him up with any of my friends.
And why is that? I had to admit I was curious about Fiona's reasons. I trusted her completely, both her as a person and her judgment.
Did he tell you anything about his parents?
Her lovely brown eyes warmed with anxious affection.
No, actually.
He hadn't. I'd asked a few times, but never pushed the issue.
I knew them, growing up. They're still friends with my parents. Well, I guess they're what my parents consider friends.
Her features rearranged into a look of forlorn sadness.
Maddie's parents are very cold people.
They didn't hurt him, did they? A burst of worry cinching my throat.
They ignored him.
He had a nanny who was very sweet. I babysat him on weekends and tried to give him lots of hugs and affection. And there was a chef on staff who adored him like a son, to a point, or a grandson, I guess. But his own parents had no time for him. The only people who gave him affection were paid to do so. And when those people left his parents' employ, he never saw them again.
That's awful.
Tears stung my eyes as I imagined a child version of Matt being ignored by his parents. My heart swelled with hurt on his behalf.
It is.
It was. My parents weren't perfect, but they told us they loved us, gave us their version of guidance, were there to answer our questions. He had none of that. Fiona's mouth curved to the side, but her smile didn't reach her eyes.
If Matt told you he wasn't capable of a committed relationship, he knows what he's talking about.
He's an excellent person. He's been married once, and, as you know, it didn't work out. He's not the type to give up easily or lightly. I nodded, swallowing a lump of grief along with Fiona's pill of wisdom. He grew up without being held or treasured. I'm not saying he's incapable of it. I'm just saying he didn't learn from the people who should have loved him the most. His priority is his work, not people. Managing a small smile, I turned my palm over and held her hand in mine.
Yes, he said something similar.
Like I said, he's a good guy, a really good guy, but you have such a big heart, Marie. You are entirely too generous and loyal and kind. You deserve someone who knows how special and amazing you are. I don't want to see you get hurt by someone who is simply incapable of giving you what you need. It's not his fault, but you are so wonderful. You deserve someone who's going to put you first.
You deserve. Don't worry. I see things clearly.
Now. I was seeing clearly. Now.
Chapter 17. Synthetic, biofabricated rhinoceros horn. A cultured 3D-printed rhino horn, which carries the same genetic fingerprint of and is visually identical to an actual horn, printed and made of synthetic keratin. Source: Pembient.
The cafe was much less busy this time, so I had my pick of spots. I'd selected the table. The coveted booth by the window, farthest from the door. The wall curved, creating a nook-type atmosphere. Noise was muted, making it feel private and cozy. Instead of staring unseeingly at the worst novel ever written, I read a handwritten letter from my friend Camille, the software developer and my neighbor in the office co-op. She'd made good on her threat to take a vacation and was currently in Germany. And she'd met a man. A German man. Her words were cautiously optimistic as well as despairing. "He treats me like a queen. Oh, Marie, I wish you could meet him. We met on my first day. I was a mess, coming straight from the airport to the hotel and my room wasn't ready. So I checked my bags and decided to wander the city. I stopped into a bakery and he came out of the back. He's so beautiful, inside and out. His father's people emigrated from Somalia 20 years ago and his mother's side is Bavarian. He speaks Somali, Arabic, German, French, and English. He owns a bakery. Isn't that crazy? Anyway, I forgot my wallet and my bags, and he gave me lunch on the house, joking I would have to wash dishes to pay for it. Then he sat with me and asked me all about myself. He's amazing. I left, feeling like I was walking on a cloud. The next day, I brought him the money to pay for my lunch, and he wouldn't take it, instead saying that I should let him take me out to dinner. So I did, and we've spent every day together since. Instead of sightseeing every day, I've been helping in the bakery, and he's teaching me how to bake. I'm making bread. His parents live in Bavaria, and I spoke to his mother on the phone last night. We're going down there this weekend to meet his family. I only have 2 weeks left here, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'm falling in love with this guy. How crazy is that? What am I going to do? I've spent my whole life building a career I'm proud of, accomplishments that are meaningful. Am I going to give all that up to move to Germany and do what? Date a guy? Who am I? I don't even recognize myself. I'm so happy and miserable and confused. Tell me what to do. Love, Camille. I smiled at her closing request, shaking my head. I had no advice to give her. I know it's popular to tell people in these situations, follow your heart. Presently, I found that advice to be irresponsible. Your heart doesn't pay the bills. Plus, hearts had death wish proclivities, throwing themselves into situations that would ultimately lead to their destruction. Take me and my stupid hopes, for instance. It might feel good in the short term to follow one's heart, but in the long term, it meant finding a broom and dustpan big enough to sweep up all the shattered pieces. "How's your friend?" Matt asked, startling me, just before he bent and placed a kiss on my cheek. He slid into the seat across from mine. I looked up, not surprised by his affectionate gesture. He often kissed me on the cheek as a greeting, but I was surprised by his sudden appearance. I hadn't noticed him arrive. "Who, Camille?" I asked, irritated at the unsteadiness in my tone. An image from Friday night flashed in my mind's eye of Matt and the woman, his Battlestar Galactica shirt, her Star Wars shirt, kissing. I'd never wished more for the affliction and subsequent relief of short-term memory loss. In truth, I'd been too open with him. I knew that now. I'd been too willing to throw myself into this relationship, hoping for more because I liked him so much. That ended on Friday. We were friends, just friends, and I was grateful for this lesson. I needed to stop confusing myself with hopes. Hadn't I been the one who wanted to explore paid services as a replacement for traditional romantic ones? Clearly, this was a sign from the universe that my time was better spent looking for a life coach and a professional dry humper in Chicago rather than the one I'd identified in New York City. "Who's Camille?" he asked, glancing between the letter and me. "Oh, no one, just a friend." I cleared my throat and held up her note. "She's on vacation in Germany and sent me a letter."
A real letter? Don't see many of those these days.
No, I guess you don't. I folded it up and slipped it into my bag, trying not to notice how handsome Matt looked when he smiled. As was typical, he was dressed in jeans and a nerdy t-shirt. He'd also added a lightweight black rain jacket, which he was in the process of removing. His hair was wet, but I could tell he'd recently